CD 4 of the Audio Course on Political Philosophy. Lecture 10. Karl Marx. Class Struggle and History.
Of course, all of you have heard a lot about Marx, one way or another. Marx was born in 1818 in Trier, died 1883 in London. He was probably the most successful political theorist of all time, at least if you measure in terms of numbers of followers. Marx is known for many things, among them his comment, "I am not a Marxist." But at the moment when he said that, he was feeling irritated. The truth is, he was a Marxist, or at least he became one. Marx grew up in a professional, secularized Jewish family in the rather liberal west of a not yet unified Germany. He studied law and philosophy, then had to leave Germany on account of his already progressive political ideas and activities. He spent some time in Brussels and in Paris, then moved to England, where he was to spend the rest of his life. England was the only country that he didn't get expelled from, and it's often said that he didn't get expelled because nobody really cared. And of course, it's always difficult to know whether it's better for the secret police to care, which shows, of course, they're worried, or as in England, for them not to care, which shows they're not worried at all. He never worked, although he was, of course, the great theorist of the working class. He did often borrow money from his friends. He once applied for a job with British Railways, one of the companies which at that time existed, but he was turned down on account of his bad handwriting. In London, he was approached by a group of immigrant German workers called the League of Communists, who asked him to write a manifesto for them. This he did, although he was late handing in the manuscript. Together with his friend and co-socialist, Friedrich Engels, who happened to be a well-off capitalist, which helped when it came to paying the bills. And the result is today known as the Communist Manifesto. This opens with the rather well-known words, "A spectre is haunting Europe, the spectre of communism. All the powers of old Europe have entered into a holy alliance to exorcise this spectre. Pope and Tsar, Metternich and Guizot, French radicals and German police spies." In this work, Marx and Engels take what at first sight looks like a rather positive view of the historical role of the capitalist class. The bourgeoisie, historically, they write, has played a most revolutionary part. Let's look now in more detail at the role of this class. The bourgeoisie, wherever, write Marx and Engels, it has got the upper hand, has put an end to all feudal, patriarchal, idyllic relations. It has pitilessly torn asunder the motley feudal ties that bound man to his natural superiors, and has left remaining no other nexus between man and man than naked self-interest, than callous cash payment. It has drowned the most heavenly ecstasies of religious fervor, of chivalrous enthusiasm, of Philistine sentimentalism, in the icy water of egotistical calculation. It has resolved personal worth into exchange value and has set up that single, unconscionable freedom, free trade. In one word, for exploitation veiled by religious and political illusions, it has substituted naked, shameless, direct, brutal exploitation. He could write quite well. He had a good style, Marx. But on the other side of the matter is the progressive function played by the same class. The bourgeoisie cannot exist without constantly revolutionizing the instruments of production and thereby the relations of production, and with them the whole relations of society. All fixed, fast-frozen relations, with their train of ancient and venerable prejudices and opinions, are swept away. All new-formed ones become antiquated before they can ossify. All that is solid melts into air. All that is holy is profaned. And man is at last compelled to face with sober senses his real conditions of life and his relations with his kind. What are these relations?